This is Cole Zimmerman, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Monday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Jamie Dickerman in studio. We'll also have a report from Tyler Donaldson as well. The 2025 crop insurance meeting underway in Fargo. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has more.
Here in Fargo at the 2025 crops insurance meetings here with NDSU Extension crops economist Frayne Olson. Frayne, a busy time of year, a lot going on here. Can you just talk to me a little bit about what's going on here in the new year?
Every year we hold this program for the crop insurance industry as part of their requirements and certification. They need to have continuing education credits, so we offer that as part of the conference. So the folks, this is really targeting the crop insurance industry. Try and give them an overview of some of the core things going on. So again, it's just to give an idea and a general overview of what's happening with the industry so that as the agents go in and start with their discussions with farmers about crop insurance coverages, some of the things and challenges they might be facing moving forward, they have that professional background and that kind of baseline that they need to be able to answer questions.
What are you looking out for here with Trump 2.0 on the horizon? There's a lot of talk of tariffs and just, how trade relations are going to sort of react to any policies he might enact here. What are you paying attention to here in mid-January now?
Yeah, so obviously in the markets, the two biggest unknowns are weather. Nobody can forecast the weather, and of course politics, because you just never really know how the political winds are going to swing or what all is going to happen. Two biggest things I'm watching, obviously, from the D.C. area would be, number one, on energy policy and what that means for renewables and renewable energy policy moving forward, what kind of stimulus we're going to be able to get. Are there going to be additional incentives to be able to bring more renewable energy online? The second piece, of course, is the tariffs. Big topics within the industry right now. I think underlying the biggest question of people are facing are that are the tariffs going to be, our probability of having something is very high. The question is this going to be a very broad-based tariff policy? Is this something that's going to be looking at targeting specific countries? Or is this going to be much more targeted, where we start looking at individual products or services? Is this going to be based off of a particular item, or is this going to be based off of imports from a particular country? And of course, that's right now really the big debate. What are the implications? And then the follow-up to that is, so what is the response going to be from our trading partners? And again, that's political outside of the United States, and so understanding the political environment within these individual countries gets to be even more challenging.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
The Minnesota legislative session begins tomorrow with the death of former DFL Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dziedzic. The Senate is tied with Republicans, DFLers having 33 seats. Senate Republican Leader Mark Johnson says the two parties have found a consensus.
Unlike the House, the Minnesota Senate was able to come together on an agreement for some power sharing between the Democrats and Republicans. And so we're going to have what looks like 50-50 committees and a 50-50 acting Senate president. And we're going to go forward with that for as long as the agreement can hold out, maybe just 3 weeks, but possibly quite longer than that.
In this scenario, Republican Tory Westrum and DFLer Eric Putnam will co-chair the Senate Agriculture Committee. Johnson said the budget negotiations are a priority.
Yeah, that's really the big goal as we get together on these 50-50 committees is figuring out what our budget is going to look like, not only investing in, the state agencies and whatnot in the short term, just making sure that they're funded in a way that makes sense, they're prioritizing the needs of Minnesotans. But then if we look forward 2 years down the road, our forecasters here at the state say that we have a $5.1 billion deficit. So unless we take that into account now, in 2 years, we're going to come right off of a cliff, and there are going to be some very, very hard cuts made at that point. So we've got to be doing this budget with an eye to the future.
Johnson's from East Grand Forks and represents Extreme Northwest Minnesota. The full interview with Johnson can be found on the Red River Farm Network website.
House Ways and Means Committee will meet tomorrow to make the 2017 Trump tax cuts permanent. Minnesota Representative Michelle Fishbach said this is an important issue for agriculture.
We're looking at the estate taxes. We're looking at the 199A. So we are working very hard to make sure that we keep those tax cuts in place because they're so important to the economy. I mean, imagine right now the way the economy is, if if taxes just, you know, started to go up immediately. So we've got to make sure that we're doing the best we can to keep those taxes low and looking at that, at those Trump tax cuts from 2017.
Pay-fors will be needed to offset the tax cuts. President-elect Donald Trump's planned Department of Government efficiency is seen as a way to finding some of those budget savings.
If they're able to really do that deep dive and look at where we can save money, what would be more efficient, what would, you know, what's out of date or not useful anymore, if they can do that deep dive, that would be incredibly helpful, and they can turn it over to Congress, and we sure can take a look at it and say, you know, this makes sense, that makes sense, and include it or use it. I don't think it'll be ready for reconciliation, but, you know, use it into the future as to where we can be more efficient.
We started 2025 with a farm bill that's 3 years old, and farmers' patience with Congress is wearing thin. Veteran Washington analyst Jim Wiesmeyer said he's optimistic that it'll finally get done in this Congress for a couple reasons.
One is that now you have a Republican heading the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman, and he works very well with G.T. Thompson. The second one is you no longer have Debbie Stabenow as the Senate Ag Committee chairman. She's retired. And you have the new ranking member on the Senate Ag Committee, Amy Klobuchar.
Wiesmeyer says the next few weeks will be important to watch.
I would suggest to carefully listen and watch to what Klobuchar says in the coming weeks relative to a new farm bill. Will she offer compromising words that she can work with the Senate and the House to finally get this new farm bill done?
National Association of Wheat Growers, U.S. Wheat Associates, are in D.C. for their winter conference. Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers President Kevin Lazer will spend time on Capitol Hill.
We'll be meeting with Angie Craig and Senator Klobuchar. And since they're both ranking members, they have a lot more power on the ag committees now. So that should be good for us.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Monday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. North Dakota State Seed Department Commissioner Ken Birch is expecting a good seed potato crop.
It's going well in the northern regions. We always have really nice quality crops coming out of our state. We've had a couple issues, obviously, with really dry weather this year, so we're looking at some quality issues probably. But I think overall things are going to go just fine. Our guys are over in Hawaii right now finishing off our winter test, so we'll get a much better sense of seed quality issues from the disease perspective pretty quick.
Birch says the Agristo plant is also big news for the seed potato industry.
Let's say, for example, there's 20, 30,000 acres of production in North Dakota, Minnesota. We would anticipate that potato growers, you know, taught me decades ago, it's kind of a 10x thing. So if you have another 30,000 acres, let's say, well, 3,000 acres has to be produced of seed in some way, shape, or form. And the way this Agristo thing is sort of lining up, it's a different sort of seed production than we normally do. And perhaps that means more acres for our growers, which is great. You know, it keeps our people busier certifying seed in the field and in the laboratory, too. So it's certainly a great development for the seed industry, too, we think.
Lowen and Associates analyst Matt Hines says the grains are enjoying some follow-through strength from Friday's supply-demand reports.
USDA, definitely the biggest news was cutting corn and bean production and ending stocks as well. You know, beyond that, I think we'll still keep an eye on South American weather. Looks like it's going to be pretty warm and dry for the rest of this week, but there are some rain chances coming in by Friday and into this next weekend.
One of the things to be on the lookout for soybean producers this growing season will be sudden death syndrome. It was first identified in North Dakota in 2018, again in 2020, and went quiet until last season. NDSU soybean specialist Wade Webster said it blew up in the southeastern part of the state.
Almost every field in Richland County had SDS present, and then we also identified it in Dickey County and in Cass County as well as positive reports. So it is something that is being spread. We're knowing that this pathogen is able to survive here, so it is definitely something we're trying to keep an eye out for looking forward in the future.
Webster said they're looking at some solutions for growers.
The most important thing that we can do is planting resistant varieties. So there is resistance available. Granted, though, many of that resistance is not very well understood in that 0 or 00 maturity groups, so that could be a concern as of the moment. But looking forward, it's something that we're trying to look at. The other thing that we could try to use is seed treatments, and there are a few products effective for that early season management, preventing that disease from initially infecting so that we can prevent later season SDS development.
USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service has extended the new swine inspection system's increased line speed trials through mid-May of this year. The National Pork Producers Council calls this a win. Economists estimate slower line speeds and the drop in packer capacity would result in an additional loss of nearly $10 per head in the first and second quarters of 2024.
This time of the year is prime bull buying season for cattle producers in the region. NDSU Extension Livestock Management Specialist Lacey Quayle said one of the main things to consider is what your calf marketing strategy is going to be.
If that's something that typically either gets sold at weaning or maybe they're retaining ownership and being sold on the grid, those are two very different scenarios that you want to be selecting a bull that helps you succeed in both of those, in either of those areas, regardless of what your goal might be.
If you're planning on keeping replacement heifers out of calves that the bull sires, there are several factors to be looking at.
Maternal traits like maternal calving ease or scrotal circumference, heifer pregnancy or stayability. The specific EPD is going to change based off of what breed, right, you're looking at. But those traits that really focus on how long a female might be productive in the herd, right? So thinking about longevity and keeping that at the forefront when you think about your females. And then scrotal circumference has implications to age at puberty in females. So a larger scrotal circumference in bulls is correlated to a younger age at puberty in heifers. And so that can be something that producers might want to keep in mind as well.
Quayle says there's no one-size-fits-all bull and to make selections based on your operation's overall goals. Go to rrfn.com and sign up for our weekly Red River Farm Network e-newsletter. FarmNet News hits your email inbox every Monday. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. NDSU's Carrington Research Center hosted the annual NDSU Feedlot School for 30 years. Extension Livestock Specialist Carl Hoppe says the event was started to help stimulate more cattle feeding in the state.
Our intent was to start providing more education or tips, management tips or nutrition tips, marketing tips on if you're going to start feeding cattle, whether it be a small feed yard or a large feedlot. A lot of the concepts all remain the same. And it's a pretty intense two-day school where we cover a lot of information all the way from, like I said, facilities to nutrition to manure management to marketing to price protection to selling cattle on the grid.
And the next event, scheduled for January 22nd and 23rd at the Carrington Research Extension Center. Full program for the year, but there is an active wait list in case of cancellations. For more information, you can contact the Carrington Research Center.
The weed resistance headache is not going away anytime soon. BASF Technical Service Representative Ken Dibert advocates a residual weed management approach.
Need to continue to rotate chemistries and promote residual chemistries, most importantly, in every crop that we can. Now, canola might be one exception where we don't have the opportunity to really drive home that residual message just for lack of options there, labeled options. But crops like soybean, corn, dry beans, you know, et cetera, we're going to continue to talk about these residual chemistries like Outlook and Zidua, for example.
The new glufosinate product, Liberty Ultra, is on the market for the upcoming growing season.
As the traded soybean acres continue to grow, I think that obviously is creating a lot of this demand. Canola, like I said, is those acres that remain strong. That's where all that demand is going to come from.
Checking markets before we leave you this afternoon. We're higher across the board in the grains. March wheat Minneapolis trading 8¾ cents higher. That's at 592¾. That July contract's up 8 cents at 609½. Chicago March wheat's up 14 cents at 544¾. Kansas City March wheat 9¾ higher at 561½. March corn 5½ higher, 476. July corn's 7½ higher, 489½. New crop December corn's up 6¼ at 456½. March soybeans 24¾ cents higher at 1050. July soybeans up 24¾ at 1074¾. November new crop 16¼ higher at 1047¼. Soybean meal for May, $8.70 a metric ton higher. The bean oil's 39 points higher. In Winnipeg, March canola, $4.60 a metric ton higher, $6.40, $6.20 Canadian. February live cattle down $1.15 at $197.62. April's down 90 cents at $198.57. January feeder cattle down 35 cents at $2.72. March down $1.30 at $268.10. February lean hogs 67 cents higher at $83.22. April is $1.07 higher at $89.75. Dow Jones Industrial Average currently 279 points higher, 42,217. Thanks for joining us. Have a great afternoon. This is the Red River Farm Network.